Today on the 10-12 podcast, Kansas softball head coach Jennifer McFalls joins the show. Plus, myself, Leah, and Eric are all here to break down the top pitching duos in the Big 12. Who do we name as the best duo in the conference? Plus, a preview of the biggest weekend of the season so far, and a whole lot more softball coverage coming up.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Basketball season may be coming to a close, but softball and baseball season are going strong, and football season will be here before you know it. So make sure you are outfitted for everything with Charlie Hustle, vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that loves the Big 12 as much as we do and as much as you do. Go to charliehustle.com now. Check out the more than 30 schools that they have available, plus tons more. And that includes every current Big 12 school, including Cincinnati, which they just recently added. They've got great stuff for you for every single program. UCF, Houston, Oklahoma State, Texas, TCU, every single one of them. Do not forget to use our promo code 10-12-15, TEN-1215, gets you 15% off all non-sale items. And you should check the website out all the time because they have sales all the time. Did you know that every Tuesday is T-shirt Tuesday? They've got discounts on their incredible selection of T-shirts. So go to charliehustle.com. If there's not a sale you see going on, you can use our promo code TEN-1215 for 15% off. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. Plus, we are partners with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. Thank you for joining us for our midweek episode. It is Thursday, and that means we're talking Big 12 softball. Joining me, as they do every week, he is the man with a top 10 sports podcast for the month of March, Eric Lopez.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. I'm still kind of trying to believe that statement, but it's accurate, so thank you.
Absolutely. If you're not listening to In the Circle and you like softball, you're doing yourself a disservice. And back for the first time in a few weeks, Jamie's the vibe queen. You are the trash talk queen of the 10-12 network. You are Leah Nelson.
Wow, it's been a while, but I'm so happy to be back, and I love trash talk queen.
Well, I almost said vibe queen, and that's Jamie's name or moniker, one of her like 12 monikers. So I can't take that from her unless you two want to have a battle to decide the winner. All right, we've got to talk some Big 12 softball today. Let's start with, I think the biggest story from this past weekend, let's just get it out of the way, is Texas Tech and Iowa State not playing any softball this weekend after weather took that series off the schedule. At this point, it doesn't look like the Big 12 is going to get it back on, not even a midweek doubleheader or anything. We had Texas Tech players who were upset on social, talking about this game not being fixed, moved, relocated, dealt with based off of the weather. It definitely isn't the best look. Like, weather happens. Ames is not the most weather-friendly place when it comes to spring and outdoor activities. And obviously, with the schedule the way it is, because you've gone to 10 teams, so you have 9 weeks of conference play, that means you're going to be playing more at home in Ames earlier in the season than they typically would. I understand the frustration from Texas Tech and Iowa State fans and players. I understand that it doesn't seem great to not have tried to do more to get this moved, especially if they'd already had to turn in double headers in conference play, you know, the week previously because of weather. But I don't know. The weather is the weather. I don't know how you avoid it. And I don't know a good way outside of trying to force a double header on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, which seems trickier than it sounds, to try and make these games up.
Yeah, well, this is the result of bigger leagues. And as a result, starting earlier in March, I was told from sources very close to the situation on all parties in this, there was an effort to move the series. They were looking at even at Kansas. They were looking at Omaha. They were looking at other places. It just didn't materialize. And I don't think anybody anticipated this much snow to hit. I think people even at Iowa State, Lee, I'll defer to you. From people I was talking to over there, they were stunned. I think they thought, well, it's going to be some snow, but we might be able to get in the games. You know, kind of like you remember the week before with Houston, there was weather in the forecast. They adjusted the schedule to a doubleheader and then a single game. They thought it could kind of get away with something like that. They never anticipated the amount of snow that hit Ames, Iowa that weekend, Lee. I'm sure you heard similar things.
Yeah, like they thought they were gonna play at least a couple of the games. I remember seeing some of my old teammates' stories and just being shocked by how much snow, but at the same time, like it's Ames. I'm not totally surprised by some crazy weather. It does stink, but that's what happens when you're that far up north and it's still only March. So, but like you said, Eric, they really thought they were going to get those games in, and I don't think anyone anticipated canceling the whole series. So, it's unfortunate, but I don't see them making these games up at all. It's just like how could you? When? Where?
It's very
What?
challenging. Right. It's not like these two teams are going to be right in the neck of the woods. And the other problem, because some people were suggesting, well, why not move it to Lubbock? Well, I'm sure the rest of the teams don't want that. That means Texas Tech gets three extra home games. I don't think that was ever an option. And some people, I think, well, why not have, did they not have a preliminary plan of moving it to another, stadium ready to go? Well, that sounds good in theory, but what if it gets rained out in Houston? Then you have a backup plan there too. It's not as easy as it sounds to some people. Now, I do think where the conference maybe made a mistake here, I probably wouldn't have had Iowa State host back-to-back series in March. You're probably playing with fire there, with all due respect to Ames, the great folks at Ames, Iowa. But I do think, but at the same time, you can't just have them start on the road the first month of the year. So that's the challenge with this bigger leagues. And if the sport's not going to start the season later, which I haven't heard, I think that's a very cold conversation. You're going to run into this issue, and I'm not sure what the solution is on this situation here, Leah, because it's not really fair to the Iowa State players to say, hey, because of where you're at, you're going to start on the road the first 3, 4 weeks of the conference play. And then backloaded. I don't think that's fair either. But I do think then maybe in retrospect, the mistake was to do back-to-back home series there. That's probably the one that got them.
Yeah, they were definitely jinxing it. I don't remember the last time we kind of did back to back, but it's tough. This has happened all 4 years I played. Well, I guess not freshman year with COVID, but there was always something getting canceled, getting switched around. But I agree, it's not fair for them to have to play the first, 6 weeks of pre-conference and then having to just do 3 more weeks of conference on the road. It just that's not fair to Iowa State. But again, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if there ever will be, but I guess they keep chugging along and see what happens.
I'll be curious to see next year when the conference goes to 11 softball teams how they decide to handle the conference schedule. Do you stick with 9? I don't think you'll go to 10. Do you cut back to 8?
No, last I heard, because I've talked to coaches about this, I heard they're staying with 9. I've heard they're staying with 9, which means you're not going to play everybody, which I'm going to defer to you. But that's like foreign thing. It's a foreign thing in the Big 12. That's like sacrilegious. Like, I think in basketball, they're going in that direction too. I believe, they went in that direction and people were flipping out. That, as I was told, now I don't know if this situation may alter this plan, maybe rethink some things, but I was told they're going to stay with 9 conference series. But that means there are certain teams you don't play.
Well, obviously you'll miss one team. I mean, I feel like it's worth evaluating to say Iowa State's the only really school we look at in the Big 12 moving forward that's going to have to deal with this in the way that they do. Obviously, there's always rain in Florida. There's rain everywhere. But out Arizona, Arizona State, Utah. Like, it, when it comes to snow in March, no one is as northern as Iowa State, because Cincinnati doesn't have softball, West Virginia doesn't have softball, and Oklahoma State. So I don't think you want to readjust the entire plan just based on Iowa State, but I'm curious if it's something they'll keep an eye on as they work towards planning for next season. Looking back at this last weekend, we don't need to. Forget it. I want to look ahead, because this weekend slate, forget the fact that just in softball, there are some great series outside of the Big 12. In the Big 12, this weekend is just absolutely incredible. You get Oklahoma State hosting Texas. Oklahoma State's lost 5 in a row, leading back to the 2022 Women's College World Series to Texas. Oklahoma State had won like 15 of 17 before that. Oklahoma going on the road to Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence, Kansas, the hottest team in the Big 12, one of the hottest teams in the country right now. Coach Jenna McFalls is going to join us here in just a few minutes. We've got a great interview with her here on the show. And then you look at the rest of the Big 12, like Texas Tech UCF is an interesting series between two teams who are vying for postseason berths. UCF, the young up-and-comers, Texas Tech continuing to turn things around. I Houston, BYU, like, I think you can say Baylor and Iowa State's not interesting, but Baylor, with the struggles they've got with Mackenzie Wilson suspended, Orme has been injured, Tobin has been injured, Iowa State not playing last week, they're going to get to play. Like, I just, this weekend feels like, outside of when Oklahoma and Texas play, this weekend might be the biggest weekend in the Big 12. And it's one of the biggest weekends in softball, period, with some of the series on the calendar.
No doubt. It's exciting. I mean, even Kansas selling out the series against Oklahoma, being ranked, by the way, top 25 finally, long in most of the polls, putting themselves in great position after the sweep with Houston. I'm fascinated to see how that pitching staff kind of deals with that Oklahoma lineup. But then you mentioned Texas, Oklahoma State, and what is – could be the last time these two teams play as Big 12 conference foes. Now, some good news for you. I've spoken to Kenny Gajewski and Mike White, both on the In the Circle podcast, and they both have told me they are definitely been talking and will likely continue to play in a non-conference game. So there is no animosity there. Maybe they are with the fans, but there's not with the coaches, and which is smart on both sides. That's a great quality non-conference, you know, RPI game. Mm-hmm. So it will not be I don't think it'll be the last time you'll see these two teams play in the foreseeable future. Heck, they could play again in the Big 12 tournament. They could play again in the NCAA tournament this year. But that's going to be the start of an interesting gauntlet for Texas. At Oklahoma State, host Oklahoma, got Baylor, got Kansas. Hello. That's a huge four-week weekend stretch for Texas. We're going to know if Texas is a Big 12 title team, maybe a contender for the number one overall national seed, a World Series guy. We're going to learn a lot about Texas over the next month with that stretch.
I'm so excited for this week. I think I'm really looking forward to this Oklahoma-Kansas team or game. This is the perfect weekend for Kansas to play Oklahoma. It's at home, sold out, like Eric said. They're on a run of a lifetime. Do I think they're going to upset Oklahoma? I don't know, but I think it's going to be a good weekend, good game. And guys, I don't want to knock out Iowa State Baylor. I'm just saying Baylor had the hardest time with Iowa State these last couple of years. And I think it's going to be a solid series. This could be a huge confidence booster for Iowa State in Waco this weekend. And Baylor's kind of on a down couple of past weekend. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that series as well.
Well, you mentioned it. Glenn Moore told me he really strongly believes Iowa State is the reason why they didn't host last year, because Iowa State beat them 4 out of 5, including in the Big 12 tournament. And we don't know the status of that Baylor roster moving forward. And Iowa State with the week off, we'll see how that goes. That's a very interesting series. And then UCF Texas Tech is a monster series from a regional standpoint. I think you look at the picture for the Big 12, Oklahoma, Texas are locks. They're locks to host. I know some people at Oklahoma State messaged me. They're kind of concerned because the RPI for Oak State dropped to, I believe it was 13.
15th time of recording.
15. I'm not there yet to panic because, for example, now if they get swept by Texas, now you're right. Now you may not host. Now we can get in quiet. But I want to see what they do against Texas at home. They still have Oklahoma on the schedule. They still got a lot of opportunities. They still got tons of opportunities to upgrade their resume. Certainly disappointing to drop a game to BYU. Give credit to BYU there. BYU Houston. Let's not sleep on that.
Right.
I would be not be surprised, guy. All right, both of you, if one of those games end up being like a 21-14 game with the way that with that ball flying out. I think it's in Provo, right? That's serious. So I could see that one of those games being like a 20-14 game. In fact, I'd be disappointed if it wasn't a 20-14 game, at least one of those three games. But then UCF Texas Tech. How does Texas Tech bounce back from a week off? Rest. UCF right there with Texas. Just couldn't get that big hit to get over the hump. They're frustrated offensively. Can they, you know, can they figure out some answers offensively against a Texas Tech pitching staff that's a little suspect? That could decide that series. The winner of that series, I think, takes a big step to the NCAA tournament. The loser, perhaps, on the outside looking in.
I mean, you look at the RPI right now. Texas is third, Oklahoma's fourth, Baylor's 10th, Oklahoma State's 15th. Part of that's that loss to BYU and the BYU series. Baylor getting swept by Oklahoma and moving up in the RPI is the problem. One of the reasons I have a problem with the RPI. Texas Tech at 20, Kansas at 26th, Texas Tech 29th, UCF 46th, BYU 50th, and then Houston at 76th and Iowa State at 90th. For BYU, like, for BYU and Baylor, you really don't want to have to lose any games this weekend. Baylor sits in the bottom. Baylor, through 3 weeks of conference play, is at the bottom of the conference standings at 1-8. Houston, BYU, UCF, all in front of them at 2-7. Texas Tech and Iowa State at 2-4 because they didn't play their series. But Baylor is at 1-8, which is, I understand the injuries. That's still shocking. I understand that the teams they've had to play, that's still shocking. To have been swept by OU and Kansas and lost 2 of 3 to Oklahoma State to be sitting here at 1-8 is shocking. For Baylor, like, at this point, with the way this is going, you really don't want to have to lose a game to Iowa State.
No.
If you're BYU sitting there at 50th in RPI and you're not in a terrible spot to try and move up, especially if you get that win over Oklahoma State to try and find a way into the postseason, you really don't want to lose that series to Houston. So, like, they're big series for Baylor and for BYU from that perspective. And for Houston, like, it's an opportunity to keep trying to repair your RPI. Maybe you can do enough to find your way into the postseason. But there's a lot on the line for Baylor and BYU, especially this weekend.
100% agree with that. And Baylor is going to be interesting because if they continue to struggle, the committee's going to have an interesting challenge with them because you mentioned the RPI they have. A lot of their body of work was when they were fully intact, when they had Mackenzie Wilson, when they had Orby. We don't know the status of those players. They may not be back. So this is not the same Baylor team that built this resume, that had wins over UCLA and Missouri at Nutter and beat Louisiana twice. How does the committee look at Baylor if these players don't come back? Could be fascinating come Selection Sunday. How do you see Baylor? Could be interesting. From that standpoint, I've talked to committee chair people in the past. They always say they look at the whole body of work and all that. But with these injuries, I think to me, you got to take a look at that if they continue to struggle. So I agree with you. If they lose to Iowa State this series, let's say, and continue their struggles that Leah has brought up the last couple of weeks, I think it's panic time in Waco at that point from a Baylor standpoint. So, and I think for BYU, you're right. If BYU wants to be a contender in the bubble, I have them currently as a first four out. They got to stay in that range, beat Houston. You got to sweep Houston. Then you set up a big series with UCF in Orlando the following weekend where you try to build your resume and get into the tournament. So I got to tell you, ask you both this. To me, this seems like the most exciting year in a while as far as the Big 12. Do you two agree with that? I mean, I'm kind of the rookie since I'm more of a day. I mean, I follow the league for years, but obviously I'm more entrenched in it because of the show, because of UCF being in the league. But this feels more exciting than the in recent memory. Am I off base there or is that accurate?
No, I think adding these like new BYU, Houston, UCS, I don't know. I think it just adds something because you're so used to the solid Oklahoma State, Texas teams. You add them and they're kind of taking some wins against these big teams. And I don't know, it just adds a little excitement, a little difference. It just seems different to me. It could be because I'm done playing and I'm just like get to watch all the time and less nerve wracking, but I 1000% agree with you, Eric. I don't know. I just think every week is just exciting.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, and you add to it, this is the best Kansas team in a very long time. This is a good Kansas team. Baylor is a good team. Yes, they're dealing with the injuries that are hurting them, but this is still a really good Baylor team. This is a really good Texas Tech team as well. And so it's not just that you have all these new teams that make it exciting. You have depth of the conference that let other people show out, because it's not, hey, I think having to play non-conference as deep into the season as the Big 12 used to, like the Big 10 does, I do think to some extent that it delays the excitement of Big 12 play. And then when you have so few teams and you're auto losing six games to Texas and Oklahoma, it kind of puts a damper. Teams have the opportunity to play in conference against other teams. There's more series are more competitive and less just like, oh, the next 2 weeks are blowouts because we got to play these teams. It is because of the depth of the conference, it's made it more exciting. And because certain teams have been so much better this year, the quality of the depth is there. So it's not just like, oh, we added more teams, yada, yada, yada. You added more teams and teams have improved this year compared to last year and the years past. So like, yeah, I think this is incredibly exciting. I look, the conference race is the conference race. It's Oklahoma and Texas. We get all that. But we're not sitting here talking about like, well, could the Big 12 maybe get a fourth team in the postseason? We're sitting here talking like, okay, we're down to teams 7 and 8. Can they do enough over the next few weeks to get themselves on the right side of the bubble and get into the tournament? Not maybe we'll get a fourth out of 7. No, can we get 8 teams out of the 10-team conference? Can we get 8 teams? That is such a more exciting conversation to have than, well, I think what we have had to have over the last few seasons.
And I think that's going to continue even with Oklahoma and Texas departure. With the addition of Arizona's having a good year, Arizona State, Utah historically good. Utah is just a year away from making the World Series. Arizona State's won national title. I think this is going to continue because you look at the big picture in softball with the Pac-12's demise. I look at moving forward. I think it's the SEC and the Big 12 potentially dominating the landscape in college softball moving forward.
Yeah, I want to reiterate something really quick. I think you made a great point. Teams are winning. I remember, speaking from experience, sometimes Big 12 felt like such a lull because you're playing Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor, all back to back to back. And it's like, can you even win a game? But these teams that are lower in the Big 12 are getting to play teams that are more even, still competitive, but you're winning more games than what it was in the past in the Big 12. So great point. It's so fun.
I think it's great. I think Big 12 is great this year. I agree. I think Big 12 is going to have a strong case for number two. I think Stanford going to the ACC is going to be weird. I think the ACC is not going to be bad. I mean, Clemson's been good. Duke's been good. Virginia Tech's is a good program. Like, the ACC is going to have a stake. It's just the bottom of the ACC is
bad.
Not
well. The problem, Phil, and I don't want to get into this because it's a softball podcast, but I'm sure you're going to cover this in the other sport. We don't know what the long-term future is of the ACC. I mean, Florida State disgruntled, trying to get out. Clemson now is disgruntled. Who knows how the long-term effects and how is this Cal-Stanford equation going to fit with the ACC? Like, I have questions about the Big Ten. Is like, because somebody argued with me, well, I think the Big Ten will be strong with UCLA, Washington, Oregon. I'm like, how do we know that those three teams don't just run over everybody in the Big Ten? And Big Ten's not having a good year at all this year. So I have questions on how all that's going to fit, whereas – I'm not saying the Big 12, you could argue maybe the geography sometimes is a little quirky, but I don't think it's insane. Like, I don't get a sense in talking to people in the Big 12 coaches that, oh, bummer, we got to go to Tucson, Arizona or Tempe. You know what I mean? Like, there's not that insane trip that you're like, cross flight, like UCLA is going to have to go to Piscataway. Stanford's going to have to go to like Chestnut Hill in Boston. What? What are we doing?
The ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference with Pacific Coast teams. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. We'll leave ACC. Look, all I'll say is this. I look forward to Duke softball playing in the Big 12 in 2030. Okay. I mentioned this last week, so I want to get to it before we move on to our picks for this week. I want to talk about pitching duos. And I picked duos because not every team is deep enough to have three, or in the case of Oklahoma, four pitchers who could all start and go out and win games against pretty much anybody. And so I felt like two was the appropriate number. And everyone, this is pretty easy. I put it to their sheet. I will tweet this out for anybody who wants to watch it and look at it after they listen, or if you want to pause the podcast, go pull it up and follow along, as long as you're not driving, please do so. But I put together what I thought were the best duos as far as pitchers at each Big 12 school. So it's pretty easy until I got to OU, OSU, and Texas, where you really had to kind of pick out like who should be number two based off of either innings pitched or ERA or things like that. So I did my best, which is why Nicole May is not the number two pitcher in this duo for me. I went with the lower ERA, which sounds sacrilegious to not have Nicole May when we're talking about best pitchers in the Big 12, but I had to do what I had to do. I couldn't just go with like innings pitched on one team and then go with like lower ERA with another, because I just did anyways. So I don't want to go over every single thing, but I put together the stat list as inning pitched, ERA, hits, strikes, and walks, strike to walk, on base percentage, FIP, and WHIP. And WHIP's the one I really want to. FIP and WHIP are the ones that I really like. Because FIP, for people who don't know, FIP is essentially pitching stats if all of the fielding stats that they had on their team were like national average, right? So it kind of tries to take out the elements the pitcher cannot control out of their stat to put a better, more true pitching stat. Because obviously it's not your fault if there's an error or someone can't field a ground ball properly or, you know, anything like that. And then, hold on, I always forget the definition of WHIP, so give me just a second while I pull it up. Walks and hits per innings pitched. So, WHIP is a really good number. Anything, around a 1 point whatever is typically a good WHIP. I love WHIP. Anytime you see a number that's under a one, good gracious, Ignatius. By the way, there are, three teams who the duo's average WHIP is below one, which is, I'll let you guess which three. It's not going to be hard. But I wanted to figure out who the best duo was. And no surprise, when you really go through this list, and I'll let you guys kind of share your thoughts as well, it kind of comes down to three teams. Oklahoma, with a look at Kelly Maxwell and Carly Keeney. Oklahoma State with Lexi Kilfoyle and Ivy Rosenberry. And Texas with Tegan Kavan and Citlali Gutierrez. Those kind of feel like the three duos who have the best shot at this. I do want to shout out Kansas. We had Casey Hamilton on last week. Good grief. What Casey Hamilton and Katie Brooks are doing for Kansas is so much why Kansas is having the success that they are having this season. The offense has been good. The fielding has been fantastic. But what they have gotten in the circle from Casey Hamilton, who leads the Big 12 with 101.1 innings pitched. Next closest is, was Shelby Smith at Houston at 76.2. So we're talking like 25 extra innings more than anyone else in the Big 12. What Casey Hamilton and Katie Brooks have done in the circle for Kansas. I understand Lexi Kilfoyle for pitcher of the year in the Big 12. And if OU fans want to talk about Kelly Maxwell, that's great. And if Texas fans want to talk about Kavan or Gutierrez, that's great. How important Casey Hamilton has been to Kansas and their success, I think she needs to be more in that conversation than she has been.
You're not going to get an argument from me. I think Hamilton's amazing. I think she's a great story. I think that's a fair, great argument for her as far as the Big 12 pitcher of the year. I have her number two behind Kilfoyle. They do play later on. That could have significance.
That'll be a Friday night game to watch.
Yeah.
That one's going to be.
Make it happen, Gajewski and McFalls. Don't let us down, all right? Let's make that happen. But I'm going to give a shout-out to Katie Brooks because I've seen her in person. She has had a breakout year for Kansas. Her ERA going into this season was around a 4.5. She has taken it to a different level. Remember, Kansas has been without Lizzie Ludwig up until recently. So she had to step up and have a big role. And that's why Kansas is now where they're at in the top 25. That's why I actually would pick them as the most valuable duo in the league, because Katie Brooks has had to pick up the slack for Lizzie Ludwig being out with the injury and help Casey Hamilton. As good as Hamilton has been, she can't do it all by herself. And it's not, and while Kansas's offense is good, it's not at the level of some of the other teams in the Big 12. So they don't have as much room for error, say Oklahoma, for example, or Texas, or even Oklahoma State, for that matter. As big of a Lexi Covey, their offense is usually very good. So I think those two have been tremendous. And now they've got Lizzie Ludwig back. So now they got three arms. So I like them a lot. I love your argument about Hamilton. I'm with you there. Give me, it's Kilfoyle and Hamilton for me. If you told me of the teams you said you kind of narrowed it down, I just saw Teagan Kavan and Gutierrez. I think Teagan Kavan is the freshman of the year in the Big 12. As if you had a vote today, I think she's the real deal. She is a star in the making. Would not, I think it's her and Keegan Rothrock of Florida for national freshman of the year right now. But so I would go Texas there as well. But my issue there is I think still Mack Morgan is their sec, maybe their second best pitcher over Gutierrez. That's why I like Kansas. If I'm voting, if you're asking me, Phil, who I'm voting, I'm going Kansas because I think those two needed each other and they've helped raise Kansas to where they're at today.
Guys, I have.
I'll say
Sorry, go on.
this.
Go on.
No, you're fine. I said that Hamilton leads the Big 12 innings pitched. Combined, those two have pitched 175.1 innings. Next closest of two players in the Big 12 is Baylor's Riley Crandall and Aaliyah Benford, 131.2. 175 to 131. 44, just about 44 more innings. Kansas, those two, Hamilton and Brooks, to the next closest of Crandall and Benford at Baylor. Nobody's been more important to their team. Actually, I'm sorry. Houston's, I'm trying to list so many things in front of me. Paris Lehmann and Shelby Smith had 147. We're still talking about almost 30 more innings, in the circle from your two stars. That's incredible. 100, they lead the Big 12 with 123 strikeouts between them. They got the most walks, which I think is what's kind of hurt them in spots, but just, I'm not going to argue with you against those two as far as most important duo. When it comes to most important duo for a team in the Big 12, may not be the best duo, but is most important, wholeheartedly agree with you. Sorry, Leah,
no,
go ahead.
you're no, that was a great point. But how exciting is it that Kansas is even in the conversation? I think that just shows how awesome the Big 12 is. I don't know, like it just a couple of years ago, you would have never thought in a conversation with Oklahoma's pitchers, Oklahoma State and Texas, you're going to talk about Kansas and we're all going to agree and just 100% be all in that they're like the most important duo. Very exciting. I also want to give a shout out to Aaliyah Benford, though. She's leading the Big 12 in strikeouts, not by a whole lot, but I just think she's kind of a baller. She hits as well. I personally like love pitchers that can field and that are super athletic. You can go down the list and there's a lot of pitchers like that, but I just like she's solid. And the fact that she has to focus on offense and defense most games is pretty incredible. But again, pumped that Kansas is in this conversation.
Some wild stats I pulled from this while looking through things. Gutierrez has walked five batters all season. In 40.2 innings pitched, five batters. Carly Keeney, who I put in for OU, I'm sorry Nicole May's not here. I put in Carly Keeney just based off of ERA and some other numbers. Seven. Walked seven batters. That if you're at this point in the season, you've gone through 30 plus games. You've pitched, Carly Keeney's got 35 innings, Gutierrez got 40 innings, and you've still got a single digit walk number.
Yeah, at this level, walks can make or break a game. And these girls are so good at hitting. They are gonna work the count. You're gonna have to pitch a lot of balls, strikes. It's just to see single digits for walks is insane. I can't wrap my mind around it. It's just that's an impressive stat to have.
All you fans, I'm sure if they're listening, are like, how can you not say, here's the thing about picking a duo from Oklahoma. You have four pitchers who can all start a game. Like Kelly Maxwell and Carly Kinnear, who I picked. Even if I picked Nicole May and Kelly Maxwell, it's still like the second fewest innings of any duo I can pick in the Big 12. The lowest we had was Sherman and Charles at Iowa State, because they've got four different pitchers they've been throwing out there. And that's less because they've got four great pitchers and more just they're just trying to rotate through everybody and figure out what's going to work. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's got four people they can throw out there. They've got four girls they can throw in the circle and be fine. And so I'm not going to argue if you want to tell me that Oklahoma has the best pitching collection of pitchers in the country. Okay, cool. Yeah. Great. You've got four that could start for any team in the country. Period. End of story. You win. But if I'm picking duos, there so little is required of them compared to everybody else. Period. Like Houston's had to have a ton. Baylor, as we've mentioned, especially with Orme out, what Benford and Crandall have had to step up and do without Orme has been a lot. Oklahoma State. Like, yes, they've got Kyra Acock, who's pitched more innings than Rosenberry. But when you look at Rosenberry and Lexi Kilfoyle, the two of them lead the conference in ERA. They're both under one. Rosenberry is at 0.98. Kilfoyle is at 0.95. Like, Lexi Kilfoyle, I mentioned whip. Lexi Kilfoyle is tied for the best whip in the Big 12 with Kelly Maxwell at 0.68. It's 0.68. I said one is good. One. Is like, that's a, you're happy. Anything like 1, 1.1, 1.2, that's a good, 0.68. That's dumb. That's ridiculous numbers. Both Texas players are at like, Kavon's at 0.77, Gutierrez is at 0.79. They have the best like combined whip of the two, but 0.78. It's ridiculous. There's a lot of good pitchers in the Big 12. I you know what? But I look at all this. I'm going to agree. I think it's Hamilton and Brooks. If we're talking about best duo in the Big 12, as far as most important, what they've had to do, I'm going to have Kilfoyle and Rosenberry close there. I'm going to have Crandall and Benford. Their numbers aren't as good as the other ones, but the amount of that's put on them without Orme.
Right.
Like, I just think it's not just about how good are you. It's how much is asked of you. And then what do you do with that? And I think Hamilton and Brooks have just been incredible, which is perfect that we had Hamilton on the show last week. We've got McFalls on this. We're talking a lot of Kansas softball, but they're a great story this season, and it's one that deserves to be talked about. When we've got a team in the Big 12 doing as well as they are, who's benefiting the Big 12 as a conference because their ERA is 26 right now, or the IRA. RPI. I'm just IRA. I'm throwing out letters, numbers. Yeah. I can't do all these letter combinations. It's breaking my brain.
No, it's exciting. I'm pumped. It's going to be a good series this weekend. I don't know. I'm just still hyped that Kansas is in the conversation. And again, like you said, Oklahoma fans might be upset, but like, we're always talking Oklahoma. We know they're good. They're supposed to be good. They're going to put some crazy stats, some crazy numbers up, but like, let's kind of highlight some of these other teams. And I don't know. It's really exciting.
All right. We've gone through the series for this weekend. We've got three we're going to pick. And with all this Kansas talk, let's start there. Let's talk Kansas hosting Oklahoma. Three games this weekend. I believe that series, everybody starts Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's Easter weekend. So everybody is Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No Sunday games. BYU doesn't have to be the lone team not playing on Sunday this week. Let's start with Kansas hosting Oklahoma. Starts Thursday at 5 p.m. Every single game is on ESPN now, except for OSU Texas on Saturday, which is on ESPN2, but everything else will be on ESPN Plus, Big 12 now. Eric, I'm going to let you go first here. Who wins? What's the record?
This is a fascinating series. I just saw Texas live in person. I think they're as complete of a team as it gets. Everybody's thinking 2 weeks from now, Oklahoma and Texas. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about that next week, but I'm really fascinated. Which Oklahoma State team do we see here? Because I've seen them in person at their peak. I've seen them at their worst. And I'm just fascinated. I was perplexed, not necessarily dropping a game to BYU. That's going to happen in Provo. But just to get shut out by Tulsa, I know that's Tulsa's big game of the year, it was sold out, whatever. Which Oklahoma State team shows up? Because I've seen this team at times look like a top five team, and at times they don't. And I think the question I have is, I know what I'm going to get in Lexi Kilfoyle. What am I getting from the rest of the staff against this Texas offense? I'm very intrigued to see. I'm going to go Texas 2-1. Tight series. I think they split the Kilfoyle starts and take the non-kill four starters. And I'm speaking of Texas.
All right. You've got Texas 2 winning against Oklahoma State. Leah, what do you got on this one?
I have to agree with Eric. I think it's going to be Texas 2, Oklahoma State 1. I don't know. Texas has just been playing so solid. It'll be tough, but I almost even want to say Texas 3, Oklahoma State 0, but I'm not going to do that because that's I don't know. That's
wow. Fighting words there. Fighting words.
I know, and I wanted to protect myself. I'm going to go 2-1.
I think the thing that concerns me is, A, when we get – I'm really curious what the pitching lineup is this weekend. Does he go with what he's been doing and Kielfeld starts Friday and they try and go with Aycock and Cuts and maybe Rosenberry comes in on Saturday and then Rosenberry and Kielfeld on Sunday? Or do we see a lot more Kielfeld this weekend and Coach Gajewski says, we'll Aycock will have opportunities, Cuts will have opportunities, Rosenberry is going to get time, but like we're gonna let Lexi try and get us the series win. I'm really curious how they're going to handle this weekend. And the fact that Texas, Kevon and Gutierrez have combined to give up 18 walks in 106.2 innings. OSU's offense at times is either someone's hitting a home run or they just kind of struggle. I don't feel like I've seen a lot of games where OSU's putting together hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. Like they need some of those walks. Here's my head says you guys are right. My heart says I can't do that. So I'm going to take OSU 2-1. I think Oklahoma State will get one in this series. I do. I think we're going to see a lot more Lexi Kielfeld this weekend than we did last weekend. I mean, she didn't pitch a ton last weekend.
You got to, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to do Saturday where it's Kyrie Aycock and she struggles and it's Cuts and then it's Aycock again. I think they're kind of protecting Lexi as much as they can so she doesn't get overworked. I think we see a lot of Lexi this weekend. So I'm going to say OSU gets 1-2-1 as well as Lexi has been pitching. I'm thinking they're giving her a little bit of rest. So I think we're going to see a lot of her and a lot of Ivy Rosenberry in the circle. Okay. Kansas, Oklahoma, Eric, this one's in Lawrence, 3-game series. What's the record?
As much as I would love this, I see Kansas steal a game. And I think they could steal a game. I'm not convinced that Kansas could score against Oklahoma. Because as good as that Kansas staff is, Oklahoma's gonna find ways to score runs. Can Kansas score with them? I gotta see it. To me, if Kansas can take a game from Oklahoma here, just put it in pen, book it, lock. They're going to the tournament. Done. If they get to take a game from Oklahoma with what they've already done. I hope it's a competitive series. I'm glad to see them getting that fan support. Big fan of Coach McFalls and stuff. But I got to go with the champs 3-0 until somebody proves it otherwise. So I think to me, you got to score some runs to beat OU. We'll see if Kansas can do that.
Leah?
Yeah, Eric's taking the words right out of my mouth. As much as I would love for Kansas to take one from Oklahoma, and now is the time. It's just, Oklahoma's going to score a lot of runs, and I just don't think Kansas is going to be able to keep up. I think it'll be kind of competitive, but at the end of the day, I'm going to have to go with Oklahoma 3, Kansas zip.
I am, as Coach McFalls will mention here in our interview, like OU fans travel well. I'm curious how many OU fans are actually going to be in Lawrence. Like, I'm curious if this is a all Jayhawk blue sellout crowd, or is this like 70-30 Kansas? How many OU fans have made the trip for this one? I'm really curious how much OU had to play with the sellout. That's not a shot at Kansas fans. I'm just curious. They do travel well. They do show up at other teams' stadiums a lot. There's a lot of OU softball fans. So you know what I'm going to do? Here's what I'm going to do. I want to see if we can reverse jinx this. I'm going to take OU 3-0 as well. And I'm sorry, Coach. I really am. I want to see Kansas get a win here. Just because I want to see. This is not an OU shot. I feel like we have to defend ourselves every time we say anything about Oklahoma's not. They are God's gift to sports and softball. But like, I would like to see Kansas get a win here. It would be huge for them. It'd be huge for the program. It'd be huge for this great season. And I agree, Eric. Like, getting that win, yeah, unless they just, you know, something insane, knock on wood, happens, like, they're going to make the postseason. I would love to see Kansas make the postseason and get themselves in a good spot to maybe, you know, make it past regional. So let's just see if maybe all three of us going OU 3-0 will kind of jinx this series and Kansas will find a way to steal one. All right, last one we're going to pick BYU-Houston. Because I think it's interesting. I think it should be a close series. I definitely don't feel like anyone should sweep anybody. And I definitely feel like there should be a lot of offense based off of the numbers I pulled when putting all these pitching duos together. So, Eric, BYU-Houston, who gets this one? What's the number?
I'm going to go BYU 2-1. I don't think it's a sweep. Both teams have questions in the pitching circle. I'm telling you, I'm going to be bummed out if one of these games is not a 20-14 game. Like the way these two teams are capable of swinging the bat and playing in Provo, I think it's a 2-1 series. I could see BYU winning that one on a walk-off. It's a big – we've talked about it earlier. It's a huge series for BYU as far as their chances to be an NCAA tournament. You got to win this at home. You got to protect your home field. And for Houston, you're right. You know, you got to start turning things around. You got that big win against Texas in your first Big 12 game, and since then it's been downhill. So this is going to be a slugfest, and I'm going to go with BYU in a tight one. I think could be the most wildest series of the weekend. I go BYU 2-1.
Leah?
Yeah, this is one of the ones where it's like it depends where you're playing. Obviously, it's in Provo, so I have to go BYU 2, Houston 1. I don't know. The ball just flies there. Obviously, Houston's a great hitting team, but it's just like Eric said. You got to protect your home field, and this is a really big series for both teams. But yeah, I think BYU is going to take it.
Looking at the stats I put together, I'll put the link in the show notes. You mentioned Aaliyah Benford leads the Big 12 with 77 strikeouts. Casey Hamilton second at 71. Chloe Temples is third at 70. So, like, I definitely think that BYU has the pitching advantage in this series. Houston's kind of struggled in the circle. Paris Lehmann and Shelby Smith have been okay, but not great. BYU's pitching isn't awesome. And so I do agree, like, there should be a lot of offense. It's not just, like, 20-14. It's 20-14 in, like, 9 innings. Just like, all right, we've been tied at 13 for 2 extra. Okay, now BYU's found it. Or Houston's found it and figured it out. Man, it's no fun if I just agree with you guys. You guys have agreed on everything.
It's because we're
pals. We're BFFs. Yep, we're tight. It's Leah, I got to get you on our in the circle pod. That's the only thing that's missing in our bonding, just to complete the bond.
So we can disagree on more things.
I'm going to take Houston 2-1. And then, Leah, can you believe that this guy has been podcasting with you for weeks now and went and had Rachel Becker, who just popped in for one show, on his show before
Crazy.
Can you believe that? You picked Rachel Becker, which I have nothing against because she's awesome. Yeah, she's done a great job doing color for OSU. But before the trash talk queen of the 10-12 network?
I could be mad, but now that he's on a... on a list with Jason and Travis Kelce of like best sports podcasts, it's like I can't even be mad at him. I'm in the presence of royalty. So whenever my time is to be on the podcast, I'll just leave it up to Eric.
I just realized I think Rachel Becker is going to probably should get some claim for helping us get to the top 10 in the month there. I mean, she was one of the guests, star power. Philip. Now I did give a shout out to Philip in the 10-12 pod during the interview there. She knocked it out. I had to invite her. I mean, Oklahoma State swept UCF. What am I? It was almost like my way of saying, my team lost to your team. Here's your congratulations. I'm getting you on the pod.
It makes sense.
But don't worry, Leah. We're getting you on. You know, we're going to get you on later in the year. At some point, we'll pick the right time. We're going to get you both on at some point. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Long ways to go here in the Big 12 season.
Yep.
Long ways to go. Lots of softball to be played. Lots of fun to be had. All right. Leah, whatever you'd like to plug, you're welcome to plug here. Leah, you just had you couldn't be with us last weekend. Why couldn't you be with us last weekend? You gotta tell everybody what you were doing.
What I was doing last weekend. I thought you were going to talk about how my tweet just went viral.
Oh, your mom. It's in my show notes and I haven't scrolled up. Apparently, I don't understand this. How is your mom more of a fan of an Iowa basketball player than her own daughter?
I know.
An Iowa State trash talking legend.
I know. I don't know either. she just loves herself some Iowa. Well, just a little rundown, but she works for the Girl Scouts and in her region is Iowa City. So she, you know, had to go up to see Lisa Bluter, who happens to be a lifetime Girl Scout member, but had to go see Lisa Bluter, Caitlin Clark, found out their favorite Girl Scout cookies. And she knows my favorite is a Thin Mint. She just didn't want to admit it, but I guess that helped my video or my tweet go viral. Caitlin Clark liked it. So I feel pretty famous. But yeah, back to your original question, what I was doing with basketball. Is that what you were hinting
at? Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I got to cover the Missouri Valley Conference Women's Basketball Tournament. It was in my hometown, which was really, really cool. So it ended up with a buzzer beater, Drake against Missouri State. And then I got to interview some Drake players, got to make some video, shoot some more video and photos. So that's why I wasn't on these last couple of weeks. But
whoa, basketball. Yeah. I didn't know that. Were you doing sideline? What are you doing?
Yeah, I was doing sideline. I'm a brand and content coordinator for like my job outside of getting to cover softball all the time. And Quad Cities hosted Missouri Valley Conference. So I was on the court getting some interviews, talking to some coaches and AD. So it was a blast. It was really fun weekend.
Got a big timer on the show here, fellas. We got an elite
here. I know. I'm the lowest person on the totem pole on my own podcast. Honestly, that's the way it should be. Let's be honest here. All right, Leah. So if anybody else wants to follow the adventures of your mom not remembering things about you, like your favorite cookie, your birthday, or whatever, right. Where can they do so?
Follow me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at LeahCJ21. Very important. Leah without an H, please. There's only one right way of spelling.
We are 1012 Network, TEN, the number 12 of the Word Network on Twitter, 1012 Pod on Instagram, and Threads, 1012 Podcast on YouTube as well. And then if you're going to be on YouTube anyways, you're going to be scrolling through podcasts, don't forget to check out Eric's show. Eric, top 10 sport podcast, month of March on Good Pods, right there with the Kelsey Brothers show. Like, did you beat the Kelsey? Did I see you beat the Kelsey Brothers show? Is that?
No, was you just more no, pop? I don't. No. I don't think so. Just behind him slightly. Aaliyah can confirm. She's a big Kelsey. I know she subscribes to the Kelsey brothers there. I'm slightly chasing them. I'm close though, right? I'm close.
Lee. You're third.
You're seventh. So there you go.
Where are they at? They're two.
You beat the Mina Kimes show. Okay.
Hello.
So there you go. There you go. All right.
That's
so
pretty overwhelming. I'm pretty overwhelmed. Well, that's because we're on In the Circle on D1 softball. Check out d1softball.com for all the latest in softball news. We're covering all the Mickey Dean story. If you're a diehard softball fan, obviously he's going to step down as the Auburn head coach at the end of the 2024 season. So that's we're covering that in the Circle podcast this week. Of course, we had Cat Osterman recently. We had Andrew Haynes, the radio voice of the Texas Longhorns, on the most recent episode that's come out as well. Talk to him in the complex. Eric Lopez-Elo is on Twitter/X. I'm there as well, doing various other stuff, so including co-hosting Around the Kingdom on this same network with Trace Trelko, covering all aspects UCF, the fastest UCF show around. And, of course, always love this particular show I get to contribute, Philip. So I always appreciate it. Good to see you, Leah. I have missed you, Leah, I will say.
I've missed you guys. It just – my weeks aren't as
You're
as
a very
great.
Important person. You're an important person. You got bigger things to fry than just hanging out with me and Philip. I understand.
No, guys. It hurt my heart that I couldn't be on the show the last couple of weeks.
It's okay. You can make it up to me. We'll get Coach Pink. Can you interview Caitlin Clark? Is your mom that tight?
Let me have my people talk to her.
Holly Rowe's got Holly Rowe's got first dibs on that. That could be a battle there.
I love Holly Rowe too.
Yeah.
Let's get Holly Rowe. There we go. Okay. All right. We've got Kansas softball head coach Jennifer McFalls. It's time to wrap this up. Jennifer McFalls coming up next. We will be back. I don't know when our show is going to be back. We'll be back next Thursday for sure to talk more softball. Maybe we'll have an episode before then. Maybe we will. I've got a list of nuggets of things I just want to brain dump so I can start putting together Google spreadsheets about running backs and quarterbacks in the Big 12. So enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you again soon. She's the head coach of one of the hottest teams in the country, the Kansas Jayhawks. We are very excited to have head coach Jennifer McFalls joining us today. Coach, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I mean, okay, I have to ask. You guys are one of the hottest teams in the country. You've got back-to-back Big 12 conference sweeps. It's been a while since you could say that. This program could say that. You have, 19 of your last 22 games are wins for you guys. You are ranked in every poll in the country right now. There's got to be a lot of excitement internally for what this team has accomplished already, just like at the halfway point of the season.
Well, there definitely is. I mean, there's quite the buzz here in Lawrence. We have just been on the road so much, so busy. It's just like we're just trying to focus on one game at a time right now. And, it's been fun. It's been a fun ride. And I think obviously the girls are in a great place. I mean, they're just playing with a lot of confidence right now and playing really free. And I just think they've been a lot of fun to watch. You know, I mean, we had a big game against Missouri last week, and obviously we didn't get the W against them, but I thought, you know, it was a great game. Ended up losing 3-2, but how can you not get excited about bringing in the number one team in the country, OU, this weekend? So, you know, it'll be a tough one, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's always exciting to play one of the top teams in the country, especially OU. So it should be a fun atmosphere.
I mean, you mentioned it, 22-8-1 so far in the season, and only seven of those games have been played in Lawrence. Has that had any effect on your team so far, you feel? Or is being home, do you feel like that's given them an extra edge as they've finally been able to get in front of the home crowd and not be on the road so much?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, obviously we loved the opportunity to finally be at home. You know, it was quite the grind the first month. Being on the road those first five weekends, I mean, obviously new this year to have UCF and add, you know, the added teams for our conference. So it forced us to start conference earlier, which forced us to be on the road five weekends in a row instead of four. But I think mentally we just had to prepare ourselves going into the season, like what that was going to look like and feel like those first 5 weeks. But it is what it is. I mean, you just have to deal with the cards that are dealt, and it's really exciting to finally be home. It was great to have Baylor at home last week, you know, two weekends ago, and then Mizzou. I mean, we've had great crowds. It's just been a fun atmosphere, and, you know, excited for our girls to have their own fan base here in, you know, at Arocha Park this weekend. Obviously OU travels extremely well. So we've had sellout. I mean, we're sold out all three games, which is not really a surprise when you're hosting OU, but I'm just excited for our girls. You know, they deserve to play at home in front of their own crowd and their friends, their family. And like I said, there's just so much excitement, so much buzz in Lawrence right now. So it's a pretty exciting time for Kansas softball.
Look, when a team starts to have some success, fans buy in even more, and you keep talking about the buzz. I mean, it sounds like you're seeing the response from the Kansas fan base from this successful start that the program has had this season.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even last year, we drew really well, especially for conference games. You know, obviously weather always wreaks some havoc on some of those home games. But once we got into conference last year, we had really, really great crowds. And you know, and I think we've done well every year. It's gotten better, but certainly this year even more so. But I think we set the tone with the way we finished out our season last year. And then even in the fall when we're playing at home, our fall games, we had great attendance. So I mean, you know, it's the fans here in Lawrence are amazing. And you know, you can tell that just by going to the men's basketball games. That environment is outstanding. So if we can ever just get a piece of what that looks like at Arocha Park, I mean, it always helps. So it's fun.
All right. You have been building this program, and this feels like obviously not like I don't know the start of something new for Kansas softball. And every year has been better and better. And last year really felt like a team that was so close and so many opportunities to kind of get over that hill and be in the spot. Now here you are. This team is playing fantastic softball. What do you attribute to this team kind of finally getting over the hump and getting to this point?
I think a lot of it starts with our senior class this year. We have eight seniors total, seven of which have been with me for 4 years. Ashlyn Anderson, this is her 5th year. So, the only one that we added in the mix there was Addison Purvis, who transferred in 2 years ago from Mississippi State. But this group of women, when they came in as freshmen, they were talented. They wanted to leave this program better than they found it. And every single year, I think that as they've matured and their work ethic has just been tremendous. I mean, they're truly the ones that have established the culture here and kind of set the tone and raised the bar for what this program was going to look like. And they've just been a really big piece of that. Even the young ladies that don't necessarily get a lot of innings on the field have just been incredible teammates. So the positive culture is really about what they have, the foundation that this senior class has laid for us. So just really excited for them, especially just to finish out so strong and for their senior year. And like I said, our goal this whole all fall, what we've talked about is how do we find a way to get ourselves in the postseason? And last year, I think what hurt us was just losing some games early on in the season. Those preseason tournaments, we had some tough losses there. And we just talked about that going into this season, like every single game matters. And you still go back and you look at our record. I mean, five of the games we lost were in those first, 2 weekends that we were on the road for 10 days. And that's just tough. That's just part of it. When you live in the Midwest, you got to go south and play, and you got to be on the road a lot. And those are a little bit of growing pains and games you can't get back. But the most important thing now is that we're in the middle of conference and we're playing some of the top teams in the country. And what we had to do was look at being ready for these tough games. And I think we set ourselves up for that. Obviously, Baylor's a great program and always has been. But, getting that sweep against them just, I think, truly gave us the confidence that we needed. And it's kind of live off of that a little bit. Like I've been telling them, like, y'all, we're good. We just got to figure out how to win instead of how to lose. And our focus became on, especially after those first couple weekends when we lost some close games down in Florida opening weekend, where we would have the lead and somehow find a way to lose it in the 6th or 7th inning. And so, our focus became on how to win innings 5, 6, and 7. Going into the, we'd have a lead and we've got to figure out how to hold on to that and finish our games out stronger than we're starting them. And I think that's the edge that really gave us, especially heading into the Baylor series, because teams like Baylor, they just don't go away. Teams like Houston, they swing it so well. So we just really kind of revamped our focus on how to finish those last few innings and most importantly, finish them as a team.
How do you feel like the senior class is, obviously they're big because as you mentioned, so many of them have been with you for 4 full years. How do you feel like the senior class is laying the foundation for this program moving forward?
I just honestly, I think their passion for the game. I mean, I think when you watch them, they're just full of energy. They play with a lot of passion. So they're just fun to watch, which is certainly something I've preached from the day I've gotten to Kansas. Like, we're somewhat in an entertainment, industry where we want, if you want fans to come back, they got to love the product and love what they're seeing. And so that alone has just been really fun to watch them grow. But I really just think their passion for the game, their work ethic. I mean, this is a group of women that I never have to ask to do extra. They've been doing that since the day they got here. Coming early to hit, staying late to work at their game. I mean, the work ethic has been there. And I think just all the hours that they've spent on their own doing extra, finding ways to get better is truly, truly paying off for, the success that we're having right now.
The transfer portal has become just a part of college athletics in general. And we see big name players transfer all over the place. You kept this entire roster together from last year to this year. What was kind of the message to the team to get them all to stay on board this train heading into the season?
I honestly, I guess it just starts with just building relationships with players and getting them to buy into what you're developing and building the culture that we had. Last year our culture was great. It was really positive. Obviously we even finished out really strong. We didn't get in the postseason, but the last half of our season was just was really, really solid. And and I just think that, truth be known, I think our younger players really just trusted the process that we were building. They wanted the opportunity to come back and continue to build this program. And I told them, I mean, like, hey, I want to live with this program we have. I don't want to go shopping for players on the portal. I mean, I love what the culture we had, and and it's great. I mean, there's no doubt at some point that's going to have to happen. And we obviously, being a team that wasn't in postseason, so we probably weren't getting some of the opportunity to have some of the top players that maybe we that were available in the portal weren't necessarily interested in coming to Kansas. So I just decided, hey, we got a great product. We just got to keep developing and building what we have. And fortunately, it really paid off. And I appreciate more than anything just the loyalty that our players have had to this program. They weren't looking to leave. And obviously we're continuing to develop some really young talent. We've got some young players on our roster that are in some really significant roles right now. And so I'm just hoping that, that they love Kansas softball and they want to continue to stay here and continue to make this a great program as well.
We mentioned our seniors. Last week we had Casey Hamilton here on the show. She has been absolutely incredible for you guys in the circle so far this season. Leads the Big 12 in innings pitched by 25 innings. She's got 101. Next closest is Shelby Smith at Houston at 76.2. And how do you feel like the amount of innings she's playing? How is she handling that? How do you feel like she's holding up with so much season left to play?
She's handling it like a senior that wants to go out on top. Her commitment level this year has been exceptional. Her work ethic has been tremendous. I mean, just her attitude, she just leads with a great attitude every day. She comes in, she's just super positive to her teammates. And I mean, she's been a competitor. I knew that the day that I first met her, how competitive she was. She was a multi-sport athlete that was really good at everything she did. And I think for her, over the course of the last 3 years, was trying to figure out how to just be a softball player. She was somebody that was just an incredible athlete that played a lot of sports and was good at everything, but she had to really dial it in and figure out, okay, I don't want to just be good. I want to be the best that I can. And I think she just decided coming into her senior year that she was going to give us everything she had. And that's exactly what she's done. I mean, she's been healthy. She wants the ball. She never tells me, gives me an excuse. She's never tells me she's tired, even when I know she is. And that's just a great senior leader for us. And I just think that she's got a defense behind her this year that is playing outstanding. So she's trusting her defense. Her defense has been there for, they've proven that. And then we're finding ways to scratch runs across the board and get us, put us in a position to win close games. So it's really just been fun watching her compete. And I just go back and I think about Sunday, how we finished. I mean, the game's on the line, bases are loaded. And we needed a ground ball double play, and we got exactly that to get out of that game against, a great hitting team like Houston. And afterwards, Casey was just emotional because she was just had so much adrenaline trying to finish that game out and do everything she could for her team. And I just think it was just so rewarding more than anything to be able to see us come out on top after just a true fight. And Sundays are a grind, everybody's tired, and especially, when you got a pitcher like Casey Hamilton that's thrown as many innings as she's thrown and still out there competing her tail off every single pitch, it's so rewarding.
There was one change you made this offseason. That was pitching coach, the switch over to Laura Heberling, who came over from Maryland. What kind of impact do you feel like she's had on this team, specifically the pitching staff so far this year?
Huge, huge. I mean, I just feel like the softball gods were looking out after me, in December, because certainly not an optimal time to be trying to find a great pitching coach. I mean, most of those people are already in place and don't want to leave programs in the middle of the year, which I certainly respect and didn't blame them. But something just really, I mean, truly, just Laura, just it was a blessing in disguise. She's been exceptional. I think she and I are a lot alike in our ways of how important it is to both of us to build relationships, because if you don't build relationships, then you don't have that, trust and that loyalty in your players. And right away, she came in and just connected, not just with the pitching staff, but with our team. And the players just love her. She's got such a great attitude, and she just brings such positive energy, and that's just infectious. It's contagious amongst our team, and it's fun. We have fun. We have fun in practice every day. We have fun in the dugouts, and we try not to make any one game bigger than the next. And and not only that, I mean, she's obviously incredibly a talented coach. I think that she does a great job with our pitching staff to keep them calm and in the moment, and focus on their strengths and not necessarily their weaknesses. So it's really been fun to watch her just develop our pitching staff and create such a positive environment for them every game.
How would you define or describe the personality of this team this year? Like every team is different. You have different people who bring different things to the room. But what do you feel like is the personality of this team this year?
I think that's probably been the element of surprise for me, is that we've gotten something a little bit different every single game from a different player. It hasn't, we're certainly not built around one player on this team. I think we've got a lot of really good talent, and every game it's been somebody else that stepped up. Whether it's been Casey, or whether it's been Lyric Moore or Haley Kripe, Angela Price making a game-changing catch in center field. I mean, we've gotten it from so many different places on this team, and it's really been fun to see that, because we've kind of gotten this little routine after the game is over, where we call somebody out, the kind of the star player of the game, or sometime we've had two or three different, and we call them out, and they got a little dance in the circle after the game is over. And it's just been so fun, because it's been somebody different every single game. And I think what I love the most is, again, I want to go back to our bench, because we got some players that aren't getting a lot of innings that are doing things behind the scenes that are keeping us in games. Our bullpen catchers, I mean, the energy in the dugout, the base runners, and just little pieces that really make up the team chemistry, so that at the end of the game, when game's on the line, I always have said the teams with great chemistry find a way to win those close games. And I feel like that's putting us in position to win those close games, like last Sunday in Houston.
Looking at the Big 12, I've felt for a while that this conference is deeper than the record show and the postseason appearances show. Now that there are more teams in the conference, it's allowing for more opportunities for more wins. At the same time, it does feel like the Big 12 is even deeper this year than it has been. What's your view on the conference as a whole this year?
Everybody's good. Every single team, every team can win on any given day. In this conference, there is not an easy game out there. There's not a game that you're like, oh, maybe I'll throw our number three or number four pitcher. No, you cannot do that. And because as soon as you do that, you're going to get beat. Again, I think we have to continue to start with our best players and take it one inning at a time, one pitch at a time, and one game at a time. Most importantly, obviously, we got OU and Texas are number one, number two in the country. OSU is right there. I mean, every single game is tough. And I've just told them, I keep telling my team, after each series, like, hey, the road just keeps getting tougher for us. I mean, again, it's feels great to come off of a weekend after we did, with the last 2 weekends with Baylor and Houston. But then all of a sudden you're cruising along and you're like, damn, now we got OU. And it's just, it's a tough road. But again, I think for the first time since I've been here, my players are just, they're so excited about the weekend, because what I always tell them is, when you play a team like OU, I mean, they're number one in the country for a reason, but they make us better. And that's how we have to approach each game with them, is we've got to find a way to get better and realize that we can compete with them now. Regardless of the outcome, they're going to make us better for every game that every team that we face from here on out.
Look, it's not like you need any extra motivation to take on Oklahoma, as good as they are, number one, three-time defending, all the accolades, and Texas as well. But this is, of course, their last season in the Big 12 Conference before they move off to the SEC. Does that add even just a little bit extra to the motivation recipe heading into the weekend?
No doubt. I mean, obviously, nothing would feel greater than to figure out a way to win a game or win this series against OU. But they're always going to be good, no matter where they're at, whatever conference they're in, they're going to be good. You know, Coach Gasso's built a dynasty down there, and you got to respect that. I mean, she's done an amazing job, and it's so awesome to see a female coach do what she's done in her legacy at OU, and it's pretty tremendous. I mean, it's pretty much unheard of. I mean, you know, it's, again, I think there's somebody that will probably always play. They're 4 hours down the road, so there's no doubt we're going to see them again in our future, and really appreciate my relationship I have with Coach Gasso. And, you know, so I'm sure that's going to continue to stay. I mean, it might be nice to not have to play them 3 days in a row, you know, playing one game instead of three for sure. But, you know, I mean, when you play teams like OU and Texas, which I'm sure will continue to play in our future, they're always going to have great programs, and they're always going to be tough teams to beat. But if you go down and if we continue to build the program that we're building here at Kansas, and hopefully we'll be a team that finds a way to win those series.
So you've been to UCF and you've been to Houston. BYU will be coming to Lawrence later this season. So you've gone to two of the new Big 12 entries this year. What was your experience like at those ballparks?
Well, certainly the first time to play, even for me, to go down to Central Florida and play. I don't think we played our best. I wish we had an opportunity to play them again, but and I'm sure we will come across them potentially in the Big 12 tournament or somewhere else down the road. But again, I mean, you're always going to go into an environment when you're on the road, and you got to be better than just being good, because you're not just facing the team, you're facing their home stand, their crowd, their, you know, their weather, those things that you're just not, we're not used to, you know, up here. We're playing in 50 degree weather, and you go to Florida and you're playing in 85 degree weather. I mean, there's just, those things can kind of do come into effect and play. And again, we've got to kind of take it one weekend at a time, but you know, again, you just kind of take lessons learned and figure out how it's going to help you be better the next weekend.
Coach McFalls, again, you've got Oklahoma coming in this weekend. Huge, huge series for you. Lots of softball left to play, including what feels like at this point a postseason berth that we're all very excited about from a Big 12 perspective. So congrats on the season so far. Looking forward to what your girls do the rest of the way.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it as well. I mean, hopefully we'll continue playing with a lot of confidence and finish out, you know, somewhere in the Big 12 where we set ourselves up to get into postseason. That's been our focus. That's been our goal all year long, and we're not going to let up.
Podcast Network.